Imagine this. You're sitting at your desk.
Right.
It's late on a Tuesday, and your inbox pings.
Oh, know that feeling.
Yeah, it's an email from your boss, a vice president, officially putting it in writing that he is, quote, accepting the risk for this massive data vulnerability on a project you're building.
Wow.
And he's telling you to just, push the project live anyway. Now, normally a paper trail like that feels like a get out of jail free card.
Exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
you've got the boss's approval in black and white.
Right. But what happens when that exact email, that supposed shield, actually puts you squarely in the crosshairs of international privacy law?
I mean, it's a terrifying scenario because it turns standard corporate hierarchy completely upside down.
Yeah, it really does.
The very mechanism designed to protect an employee from blame becomes the exact instrument that incriminates them.
Welcome to today's Deep Dive. Today we are exploring a highly realistic, incredibly high-stakes corporate compliance scenario.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It was designed by Excellus, a company that builds scenario-based security training based on real-world incidents.
Right.
So our mission today is to unpack a digital age corporate thriller playing out right now in a data engineer's web browser. We are going to explore the extremely dangerous line between a business risk and regulatory compliance.
And, whether you are a junior employee, a mid-level manager, an executive, or just someone who occasionally uses AI tools to speed up your workflow, I want you to step into the scenario with us.
Definitely.
Because the pressures we are going to dissect today, the looming deadlines, the weight of authority, the overwhelming desire to just get the product shipped, these are universal.
Absolutely.
You will likely face a version of this in your career if you haven't already.
Okay, let's unpack this setup. Excellus gives us a scenario with two massive problems and, well, one ticking clock.
Yeah, the clock is key here.
We start with a guy named Mark Devereaux. He is the VP of Claims Innovation at this massive European insurance group.
Big.
Right. And Mark is 18 months into a highly complex multi-cloud migration. He have a regional CEO presentation in exactly 3 weeks.
Oh, man. 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is his big return on investment moment. This is where he proves to the board that all the time and capital spent on this migration was worth it.
It is the ultimate high visibility milestone. I mean, the kind of deadline that dictates annual bonuses and, frankly, career trajectories,
Exactly.
it does not move.
But IT security just did their pre-launch review, and they threw up two massive go-live blockers. First, they found a misconfigured AWS S3 storage bucket.
Ugh.
Yeah. This bucket holds 14 million policyholder claims records. And right now, the access is set to public.
14 million. That's wow.
Anyone with the URL can see it. And, for those who haven't worked directly in cloud architecture, this isn't some complex cinematic hacker intrusion.
Right. No green code raining down on a screen.
Exactly. An S3 bucket is basically a digital filing cabinet. And making it public is often as simple as a developer just accidentally checking the wrong box on a drop-down menu during a routine update.
It is a terrifyingly easy mistake to make. I mean, the fragility of these systems is a constant underlying anxiety in the tech sector.
Yeah, it really is.
One unchecked box and 14 million records are just sitting on the open internet.
And then there's problem number two. Half of Mark's analytics team has been quietly using an unsanctioned third-party AI tool called ClaimSense AI to build the predictive models they need for this presentation.
Which is so common right now.
Right. And there is no data processing agreement, no DPA in place with this vendor. So fixing both of these issues the right way would take somewhere between 4 to 8 weeks.
Which totally blows up Mark's 3-week timeline for the CEO presentation.
Completely.
Yeah.
So Mark is looking at a guaranteed career failure if he delays versus this potential sort of abstract security problem if he proceeds.
Yeah, that's exactly how he sees it.
Which leads to his fateful decision. Mark sends an email to his team, including his lead data engineer, Priya Mehta.
Okay.
And in this email, he explicitly states, I'm quoting here, "I am accepting these as program risks and authorizing go live. We will remediate in Q2 Sprint 1."
He hit send, genuinely believing he just cleared the roadblock for his team, like he's the hero.
Right. And I find Mark's mindset here fascinating because from his perspective, he probably thinks he's just being a decisive leader.
Oh, absolutely.
But to me, it's like a restaurant manager deciding to ignore a massive health code violation in the kitchen because it's a Friday night and they don't want to lose the dinner rush revenue.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You can accept the business risk of serving a slightly burned steak, but you don't have the legal authority to accept the risk of giving your customers salmonella.
Exactly. You are prioritizing the immediate schedule over fundamental safety regulations. But the reason Mark makes that trade-off comes down to a very specific cognitive trap.
Okay, tell me about that.
What's fascinating here is the distinction between a bug and a breach. We are dealing with a phenomenon known as category confusion.
Category confusion.
Yeah. Mark is treating a regulatory risk as if it were a standard business risk.
Meaning he's putting the problem in the wrong mental bucket.
Right.
But, I mean, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Sure.
Isn't that exactly what executives are paid to do? To weigh the options, accept risks, make the hard calls, and ensure the project gets delivered on time.
I mean, in a lot of contexts, yes.
Right. Because in agile software development, mm-hmm. deferring sixes to the next sprint, the whole we'll fix it in Q2 mindset, that's standard operating procedure. If every project stopped for every minor flaw, nothing would ever ship, right?
Well, you are describing a valid approach to technical debt.
Okay.
If the user interface is clunky or, you know, a non-essential feature is lagging, a VP absolutely has the authority to accept that business risk.
Makes sense.
They can say, we might lose some user engagement, but it's worth it to hit the deadline. But an executive cannot accept a regulatory obligation on behalf of the entire organization.
I see.
Under the General Data Protection Regulation in Europe, the GDPR, the statutory authority to assess data exposure, does not belong to a VP of claims.
Who does it belong to then?
It sits independently with the Data Protection Officer, the DPO, and the Chief Information Security Officer, the CISO.
So Mark is basically signing checks from a bank account that doesn't belong to him.
Precisely.
He is legally overriding authorities he doesn't actually possess.
Exactly. He does not have the legal or statutory power to accept a GDPR violation. And frankly, the situation is actually much worse than Mark realizes.
How so?
Because he doesn't grasp the true nature of the AI threat. That unsanctioned tool, ClaimSense AI, their terms of service explicitly allow them to train their own proprietary AI models on the data submitted by users.
Oh, wow. So the insurance company's confidential, highly sensitive claims data is now actively feeding a public AI model.
Yeah.
Mark thinks he's just delaying a paperwork exercise, getting a vendor contract signed next month.
Mm.
But in reality, he is authorizing an ongoing, massive data exfiltration.
His category confusion has blinded him to the reality of the threat. But, you know, the immediate crisis doesn't actually land on Mark.
Right.
It lands squarely on the employee who receives his authorization. Let's look at the engineer on the other end of that email.
Let's shift to Priya Mehta. So it's 4.47 p.m. on a Tuesday. Priya is looking at her monitors. On one tab, she has the live AWS console.
The ticking bomb.
Yeah, she can literally see the misconfigured S3 bucket with 14 million records sitting there, exposed. On the other tab, she has the ClaimSense AI privacy policy open, which she just read.
Right.
And sitting right there in her inbox is Mark's email telling her to push the code live.
I mean, she is the one with her hands on the keyboard. She's the final point of friction before this goes live.
And according to the Excellus training material, Kriya is being crushed by four distinct psychological pressures right at this exact moment.
Yeah, this part is fascinating.
Let's break them down, because mm-hmm. this is where the human element really complicates the legal reality. First, there's authority. She has a vice president's explicit written approval to proceed.
Right. And the human brain is wired to defer to authority, especially in hierarchical corporate structures.
Of course.
When a VP puts it in writing, the psychological burden shifts. The employee feels like they have been absolved of responsibility.
Like, hey, it's his call, not mine.
Exactly.
Second is the deadline. The CEO presentation is looming. If she stops the launch now, the entire digital transformation narrative falls apart and she becomes the bottleneck.
Nobody wants to be the bottleneck.
No. And third is remediation deferral, the promise that we'll fix it next sprint.
Oh, remediation deferral is a massive cognitive distortion. It leverages something called temporal discounting.
Temporal discounting.
Yeah. Our brains naturally treat future consequences as less severe or less real than immediate pain. Yep. The immediate pain of ruining the CEO presentation feels unbearable, but the abstract future concept of fixing a database in Q2, that feels totally manageable.
So it tricks the brain into viewing a permanent exposure as just a temporary hiccup.
Exactly.
And then the fourth pressure is complexity rationalization. The team keeps telling themselves it's just aggregated data. Nobody's going to find the URL anyway. They minimize the severity to justify moving forward.
And when you combine all of that deference to authority, deadline panic, temporal discounting, and rationalization, you create an environment where a perfectly intelligent, ethical engineer can talk themselves into doing something incredibly dangerous.
Which brings us to the choices Priya has in the Excella scenario. Let's look at choice C.
Okay.
She knows she can fix the S3 bucket herself in 25 minutes.
Oh, wow.
How does she just quietly fix the bucket, say absolutely nothing about the AI tool so the presentation can happen, and let the VP take the fall for the AI vendor contract later?
I mean, it sounds tempting.
It seems like the most pragmatic way out, right? She protects the database, she saves the deadline, and she keeps her head down.
It feels like the ultimate win-win compromise. But it is actually one of the most perilous traps in modern compliance.
Really?
Yeah. Fixing it quietly or simply proceeding with the VP's authorization both trigger a massive legal mechanism under GDPR Article 33.
Okay, what exactly does Article 33 mandate?
It mandates a strict 72-hour breach notification clock. If there is a personal data breach, the organization has exactly 72 hours to report it to the supervisory authority.
72 hours.
But the critical, terrifying detail is the trigger. That clock starts ticking the absolute second the organization becomes aware of the breach.
But wait, how does the law define when a massive multinational corporation becomes aware? I mean, the company doesn't have a single brain.
And that is the crux of corporate liability. Under the law, an employee acts as an agent of the company. The company becomes aware the moment its agent becomes aware. Priya, receiving that email, looking at the exposed AWS bucket on her monitor, and reading the AI terms of service, that precise moment is legally defined as the organization becoming aware.
Wow. So by hitting send on that approval, the VP essentially started a legal stopwatch on his own company without even realizing it.
That is the exact mechanism of the trap. The email creates an immutable time-stamped record that the organization's agent was actively looking at a live vulnerability.
Because it's all logged in the corporate server.
Right. If regulators audit the company 6 months from now, the company cannot claim they didn't know about the exposure until Thursday. The regulators will point directly to that Tuesday 4.47 p.m. email thread.
So Priya is staring at this 72-hour ticking clock, but it's actually worse than just the bucket. Because the problem isn't just the exposed S3 bucket she can fix in 25 minutes.
No, it's the AI.
Right. It's the second tab she has open, the ClaimSense AI privacy policy. Let's look closer at the specific data her team uploaded to this tool, because I think a lot of people listening will actually recognize this behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
The analytics team fed this unsanctioned AI things like aggregated claims frequency tables, loss ratio trend data, and claim severity distributions by demographic band.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the textbook definition of shadow AI.
Which is essentially employees finding their own AI workarounds because the approved company tools are either too slow or they just don't exist yet.
Exactly. Employees are under immense pressure to work faster and innovate. So they find a free or cheap AI tool online, upload company data, and ask it to generate predictive models or summarize giant PDFs or write code.
We see it all the time.
But under GDPR Article 28, any data processing done by a third party requires a formal data processing agreement, a contract that dictates, with legal precision, exactly how that data can be used, stored, and deleted.
Which they don't have.
No. And furthermore, GDPR Articles 5 and 6 require a lawful basis for transferring that data in the first place.
And I'm guessing we really needed to crunch these numbers to impress the regional CEO is not considered a valid legal basis for an international data transfer.
The law is entirely indifferent to your PowerPoint deadline.
But let me push back on this because I want to revisit that complexity rationalization pressure you mentioned earlier.
Okay, let's do it.
The analytics team just uploaded aggregated data.
Right.
We aren't talking about individual names, social security numbers, or home addresses. It's just broad mathematical trends, claim severity by demographic band. Why is a broad trend line such a huge deal in the financial sector? It sounds completely anonymized.
That logic right there is the aggregated data myth, and it is rampant in the corporate world.
It seems logical, though.
It does, but in highly regulated sectors like insurance, finance, or healthcare, aggregated data is incredibly dangerous because it can be seamlessly reverse engineered.
By reverse engineered, you mean like tracing a broad statistic back to a specific person?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Think about it like a Sudoku puzzle.
Okay.
You don't have all the numbers on the board. But if you have claim severity separated by very specific demographic bands, say, a specific age group, living in a specific zip code, driving a specific vehicle type, a malicious actor, or even just the AI company's own internal algorithms, can cross-reference those quote-unquote anonymous tables with publicly available data or other leaked data sets.
Oh, I see.
By combining those surrounding pieces of context, you can figure out exactly who goes in that blank square. You can re-identify small cohorts and eventually re-identify specific individuals.
That mosaic theory of data privacy is fascinating. You piece enough anonymous tiles together and suddenly you have a high-resolution picture of a person's life.
And the moment that aggregated data can be reverse-engineered to identify a living person, it instantly triggers the GDPR Article 4 definition of personal data.
Which means all the strict rules apply.
All the strict regulatory rules immediately apply. And here is the vital organizational reality. Only the data protection officer is legally qualified and statutorily authorized to evaluate that mosaic theory and make the call on whether a data set crosses the threshold into personal data.
Not the VP.
Not a data engineer, not an analytics team, and certainly not a VP of claims innovation trying to hit a Friday deadline.
Because the analytics team simply doesn't have the legal training to evaluate re-identification risks.
Exactly.
So when Priya is looking at that AI privacy policy, she is looking at a massive, unauthorized transfer of highly regulated financial data to a third party that is openly stating they will use it to train their own public systems.
It's a nightmare scenario.
It really is. All these details, the misconfigured S3 bucket, the 72-hour ticking clock, the shadow AI, the mosaic theory of data, it all leads to one clear, albeit deeply uncomfortable path forward. Let's reveal the actual right answers from the Excellus scenario.
Let's start with Priya sitting at her desk on Tuesday evening.
Right. For Priya, the correct path is choice B. She must halt the deployment immediately. She needs to document her awareness of both the bucket and the AI tool in writing and escalate them directly to the CISO and the DPO.
Yep.
She cannot fix it quietly, and she absolutely cannot push the launch live.
She has to take her hands off the keyboard and pull the emergency brake, regardless of what her VP ordered.
And for Mark, the VP, his correct path was also choice B. Before ever replying to his engineering team, he should have taken that initial IT security report and escalated the findings to the CISO and DPO to ask, hey, do we have a reportable data exposure here?
Right. He needed to ask the experts.
He should have deferred his go-live authorization until he had explicit legal clarity from the people authorized to give it. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Think about the human element. For Mark to actually do the right thing, what does he have to physically do?
He has to pick up the phone, call the regional CEO, and have the most painful conversation of his career. He has to say, that massive multi-million-dollar presentation in 3 weeks, we have to cancel it because I cannot legally launch the platform.
The psychological difficulty of the correct choice is staggering. I mean, it requires an executive to willingly admit failure right before the finish line. It feels like career suicide.
But an uncomfortable conversation with a CEO about a missed deadline is significantly better than a supervisory authority inquiry that begins with the sentence, we have timestamp proof that the VP sent a written authorization to proceed while fully knowing about a 14 million record exposure.
Oh, absolutely.
A missed deadline is a bad day at the office or maybe a lost bonus. A willful, documented GDPR violation is a career-ending, potentially company-bankrupting event that comes with massive fines.
It goes right back to the category confusion. We'll fix it next sprint. It's a perfectly fine philosophy for technical debt. If the font on the website is the wrong shade of blue, or a secondary button doesn't load fast enough, fix it next sprint.
Totally fine.
But it is entirely unacceptable for live, regulated customer data exposures. You simply cannot schedule regulatory compliance for Q2.
And that is the ultimate takeaway. The mechanisms of the law do not accommodate agile software development schedules.
This whole scenario is a masterclass in how small, seemingly rational choices driven by everyday corporate pressures snowball into massive legal liabilities. You know, it is really easy for us to sit here and judge Mark and Priya from the outside, safely removed from the stress of that Tuesday afternoon.
It is always easier to spot the trap in hindsight.
But I want you, the listener, to reflect on your own workplace for a second. Be honest with yourself. Have you ever used a shadow AI tool?
I bet a lot of people are nodding right now.
Have you ever taken a confidential PDF, some internal meeting notes, or a spreadsheet of customer metrics, and just dropped it into a free web-based AI summarizer just to hit a deadline on a Friday afternoon?
If people are truly honest with themselves, a vast majority of the modern workforce has done something along those lines in the last 2 years.
Right.
The tools are just too convenient to ignore.
And have you ever accepted a remediation deferral? Have you ever sat in a Zoom meeting and nodded along when someone said, yeah, it's a known security flaw, but it's an edge case, we'll patch it in the next update, just because everyone was exhausted and wanted to get the project out the door?
We all have.
We've all felt the intense, almost gravitational pull to choose the path of least resistance.
This raises an important question, one that goes far beyond this specific European insurance company scenario. As AI tools become universally accessible, literally integrated into our web browsers, our phones, and our daily workflows, and the pressure to innovate at lightning speed only increases, how vulnerable are we?
That's a great question.
Are we all just one harmless data set upload, one unchecked box, away from triggering a massive regulatory crisis without even realizing it? Are we actually innovating, or are we just using highly advanced tools to build very expensive, well-documented liabilities?
That is a chilling thought to end on. We are rushing to the airport, so obsessed with not missing the flight, that we're completely ignoring the fact that we left the front door wide open while handing the combination to our safe over to a stranger.
Yeah.
It's a perfect storm of modern convenience and catastrophic risk. So the next time you are faced with a looming deadline and a convenient shortcut, remember Priya's 72-hour ticking clock.
Good advice.
Remember that an email from your boss doesn't rewrite international privacy law. I want to challenge you to think critically about the actual long-term cost of those everyday corporate shortcuts. Is hitting that Friday milestone really worth betting the entire house? That's all for today's deep dive. We will catch you next time.